Carla Esparza. We'll get into that fight. Actually, a big day of fight announcements. A lot of fights were announced today or reported out there, so we'll get you the latest on all of that. A couple of cards filling out here in the next couple of months. The Detroit card, the Las Vegas card here in December, some other fights as well. Start to look ahead a little bit to UFC 216 and a potential comeback that I don't think anybody wants to see, but we'll find out what Brett has to say on that. But as we said, it is Adam Hill from the Las Vegas Review-Journal covering thecage.com. Brett Okamoto from ESPN with you as we are each and every Wednesday night. Brett, how are you doing?
I'll never say no to a comeback, man. Every really? Comeback's good, right?
No, it's not.
No?
No, I don't think that's true at all.
Oh, come on.
And we will, I almost want to just do it right now. We'll get into it later. You don't really think a Chuck Liddell comeback is good.
Don't let me get you off your schedule. I know you're meticulous
no,
about
care.
This. You spend
I'm
time
really
in the afternoon. You write it out. It's there in front of you. We'll follow the schedule.
It's not that meticulous. Not. I mean, it says 6:42 and 38 seconds. I don't know why you'd say that's meticulous at all. But, yes, we will get into Chuck Liddell. What's the I don't know. He's 72. I don't know how old he is. It's insane for him to want to fight. We'll get into that later on. We've already talked a little bit about it, but we will delve more into it now that it seems like he's teasing it more and more out there on a regular basis and calling out certain opponents. We'll find out about that later on. We did want to go back and recap what went on in the MMA world, not only what happened, but what it means as well, with a couple of big fight cards. And let's start with the UFC card. I thought the Bellator card was very interesting as well, but let's touch on the UFC fights first. And I know last week we were talking about the fact that the main event was gone with OSP and Shogun. OSP was instead going to fight Okami, which was, you know, it's a matchup that just was thrown together because they had to make something for OSP. It was what it was. He was dominated as we expected. But we were excited about Claudia Gadelha and Jessica Andrade, and I don't know how to describe the fight. It was a really good fight, an entertaining fight, but it was like one-sided in both directions. Claudia won the first 3.5 minutes convincingly. I thought she looked great. She was fighting very well. Her jab looked good. She was moving well. And then all of a sudden, Andrade just turned things around and completely dominated the last 2+ rounds and looked as good as she has at 115.
I think you just, articulated sort of Claudia Gadelha's problems. You can't win. You can't win a championship if you can only fight for 2 rounds. You
know,
in this one, she really only got one in.
Yeah.
I mean, that was her big problem with Joanna, and it showed itself here too. And you know, with Joanna, she's so long and she's just a cardio machine, so it's going to give you problems. And then with Jessica, it's just the pressure, you know, the constant pressure. It just drained Claudia Gadelha. So, I mean, Gadelha's skills wise is phenomenal. I mean, one of the absolute best female fighters on the planet. But if she can't figure out how to fight past the first 5 minutes of a fight, then she's never going to win a title. It's just never going to happen.
Now, the interesting thing, and I certainly think Andrade is the story coming out of the fight, but while we're talking about Claudia Gadelha, let's look at what happens with her, because before, she was in the weird spot of being kind of the Joseph Benavidez of, she's the second best person in the division. She can't beat the champion. So I guess she's just going to keep on, you know, taking on all challengers. And eventually, if she beats enough of them, she'd have to get a title shot again. But now all of a sudden, she lost one of those fights. So the story changes for her. I guess what happens with her now being one of the top people in the division, but having coming off a loss, having 2 losses to the champion, it's a very weird spot to be in.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not panic time. She's still young and she's got time to improve, but there's no real clear answer here because, you know, of course it's easy for us to say, we'll just go up and wait, you know, get a fresh start. 125 is wide open, but there's a whole lot of fights there that would give her plenty of trouble. I mean, Joanna's going to move up to 125 eventually. Valentina Shevchenko, that's her plan to go to 125. I would heavily favor Valentina Shevchenko over Claudia for the same reasons, you know, and Claudia, as good as her hands have looked, what's her bread and butter? It is grappling. So anytime you're moving up a weight class and you're a grappler, that adds an extra caveat to it, an extra challenge to it, because it's harder to control those bigger bodies. So it wouldn't surprise me to see her stay 115, or maybe she comes out and says, I think it's the weight cut. I think that's why I'm gassing. and then she moves to 125. It's either going to be one of those two things. Either she's going to say, clearly I have cardio issues, I think it's because of the weight cut, I'm moving up to 125. Or she's saying, no, I need to fix this at 115. I can't go up and fight these bigger women. This is my home. This is my weight class. I'm going to stay here. I don't think either one is necessarily a bad option. But, yeah, she's just got to figure out how to fight deeper in the fights.
Well, that kind of leads into, and we'll get back to Andrade in a second, but it leads into the question of, with UFC creating the 125-pound weight class for females, which they have not had before. It's been 115 to 135. Now you have that one in the middle. You have a lot of girls at 135 saying, hey, I should have been fighting at 125. I was fighting against bigger girls. I'm coming down to 125. Then you have girls at 115 like Claudia, who maybe were cutting too much. Now they can go up and fight at 125 and meet, in the middle. So that group of female athletes meets in the middle. But then how many do you think make that move, not for either one of those factors, but more like, hey, you know what? That's the division where there's not a champion, and that's where I'm going to be able to make my fastest move up the ranks.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's just part of combat sports. You see that all the time. But I really don't look at that as a bad thing, because the women's side of the sport needed a 125-pound division so bad that what you're describing is going to be a byproduct of it. But it's still an extremely positive thing. And look, I mean, I look at Shevchenko as the favorite there, and I know that people are going to call me crazy, and they like Joanna, and it's 1A and 1B, but that to me is Valentina's division right now. I think that's where she fits in, and I'll be looking at her to own it, take control of it. I mean, this is her opportunity, really, because I do think she's a marketable person in a weird way, not in your very traditional way, but she has some things going for her with the dancing and the fascination with guns, and she's just an interesting character.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
She does it. She's not great on the mic. She's actually not good at all on the mic.
Terrible.
but she's got some qualities to her that I think they can run with.
She's not good, but she's not good because she tries, and she shouldn't try, because what she should do is, I'm sure you've interviewed her several times as I have, where her trying to be like dynamic and personable on the microphone doesn't work. She can't do it. But her answering questions in a very cold, calculating way is a character. Like, even though that's just her, it's a character. And people, like, being foreign and kind of having the accent and the mystery about her, and then just the cold way in which she answers questions when she's not trying, that works.
Oh, man. I don't know how we got off on this tangent, but after Edmonton, when she was unhappy with the scores, and I was asking her questions, and I asked her if she would, she'd consider an appeal, and she just... She's so confident. She's not really trying to be one way or the other. Like, she was just thinking about what had happened, and just like her facial expressions and like some shrugs that she made, and then she like stares directly through you when she answers.
Yeah.
She does have that Eastern European badass element to her, for sure.
Yeah, and like just the way, like, I've been talking to her, like asking her about a fight, and she just like, she's like, what's with the analysis? I will go out and fight, and I will hurt her.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Well, that was terrifying. But then she tries to do these interviews where she's like, I need to do this, or I need to, like, the whole, everybody wants to be Ronda Rousey, everybody wants to be Conor McGregor, that thing. And I think somebody has told her, like, hey, try to be this. Like, no, be who you are. That is an awesome.
It's awesome.
It's an awesome character to sell.
I think the English is also something to consider with her. I think sometimes she doesn't know how to articulate herself, so then she just kind of goes to these stock
like 100
answers.
Languages.
Yeah.
I think she actually does speak 5 languages. So.
Yeah.
I think that is another one, like, to try to articulate yourself in a different language. But yeah, I think her sticking with that would be great. And I think ideally, I mean, you mentioned that could be her division. A lot of people say Joanna. Ideally for the UFC and for maybe for the future of the women's side of the sport, Shevchenko going down and winning the title, Joanna staying at 115, and then Joanna versus Shevchenko, champion versus champion, I think that's the ideal situation for what could happen.
Yeah, I think you're going to see some quote-unquote fun super fights that exist there, because those women are able to make those different weight classes, and it's still sort of not as deep, I guess. So you do have like these ones that'll kind of stand out. Joanna being obviously 115, Valentina if she does 125, that could create a real good super fight.
Yeah, that'll be good. So we started this talking about the Andrade Gadelha fight. We talked a little bit about what happens with Gadelha. Andrade is, to me, the more interesting story, because she comes out of this fight off a ridiculously good performance. That Andrade came down from 135. As you mentioned, that's a huge drop because we just talked about adding 125. She dropped when there was nothing in between. Goes from 135 to 115. After her first performance at 115, that's when I said, okay, she is the champ. She's going to win the title. She's going to beat Jan Jacek. She worked her way up to that fight and just didn't perform the way she has in other fights. That performance we saw Saturday, now obviously the competition is different. The matchup changes. The styles change. But that Jessica Andrade we saw on Saturday is the one I thought was – or Friday is the one that I thought was going to go in and beat Joanna Jan Jacek. We never saw that. Maybe the confidence changes. Maybe something changes. But if that fighter goes in and fights Jan Jacek, it's a much better fight. And I don't have a problem seeing that very soon.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree. I mean, I picked Joanna, I want to say, halfway comfortably the first time they fought. I was not in the same camp as you. And I think I probably would pick Joanna again. And I pumped the brakes a little bit on you saying, like, oh, this was... If this version goes in and fights, you know, it was still her. And yes, was it
but
her?
She wasn't aggressive
was
at all.
Was it her best performance against Joanna? No, but I think Joanna was just skillfully.
She was, but also
skillfully playing the matador to her bull. And
Andrade wasn't aggressive in that fight. I mean, I get what you're. It was a stylistic thing where Joanna kept her off balance, didn't let her do what she wanted to do, and that's. That's why she's a champion. That's why she's the best. But Andrade got out of her own game.
Ah, go back and rewatch it. I don't think you're going to watch that 25 minutes and say, oh, she was never aggressive. When she was aggressive, it just didn't work out for her like
right,
it usually does.
She got off of it, though.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't keep pursuing it. She stopped.
I think your overall point is correct. I don't think we need to see a whole bunch of fights. Jessica Andrade does not need to go off and win 5 more fights before she gets a rematch. I'm with you on that. I just... Let's be easy about, like, oh, if this one shows up, you're gonna trick yourself again, Adam. You're gonna get all hyped up about Jessica. You're gonna pick her, and then you're gonna be disappointed at the end of the
night. I
don't
think I tricked myself last time. I still think I was right. Actually, it was not. Clearly, I was wrong about that fight. But I guess the bottom line is that coming off of Jan Jacek Andrade in Dallas, a lot of people would say, yeah, I don't need to see that fight again. But this is the kind of performance that would make you say, okay, yeah, I can see that fight happening again. I'm okay with that.
End of 2018, that's fine. I'm down for that. They can build up that rematch. I think she needs to win one more, you know, and put it in more of a high-profile spot than FXX on a Friday. Let her fight on a higher-profile card, build her back up, give her, a showcase fight. You know, I'm okay. I'm even okay with that. I'm even okay with just giving her an opponent that she will wreck in a high-profile situation to rebuild up that rematch.
There you go. So we'll see what happens with that division going forward. Of course, Joanna defending the title once again next, or it's not next month yet, but in November, and we'll monitor where Andrade goes next and maybe get in that fight. Two other things real quick to hit on from that card, and we'll talk Bellator later, but Gokhan Saki makes his debut in the UFC. He's had one fight in MMA, didn't go well, went back to kickboxing, had a great career, and then so many people were excited to see him. I mean, it was a good knockout. It was exciting. I don't know that he, you know, took the world by storm like a lot of people were hoping.
Yeah, I think that's a fair summary. I mean, he's definitely got skills, and he is definitely a hard hitter. And you and I watched this fight together, and I picked him to lose, actually, just because I thought, you know, coming in, hadn't fought in 2 years, facing a big guy, you know, maybe he could get the other guy would get a takedown. I kind of thought that Saki would wear out, would gas. I thought that was a possibility. He did, but then his opponent absolutely took zero advantage of it whatsoever. So I think Saki's a guy that they need to come up with smart matchmaking. You know, matchmake him smartly, and we can have fun with him. Matchmake him incorrectly, and I think he'll get whooped in there.
But you say that, and I know that people talk about that all the time. Are you okay with matchmaking to where you're putting a guy in the best position? I know it's, you know, getting into the purity of things. Shouldn't it be like, hey, let's match him up with who he matches up
with? Ideally, yes, but that's not how the world works
right now.
And this guy is in his 30s. You know, he's not a prospect. He's not a guy who needs to rise up a ladder. You might as well just do what everybody wants to do, and that's give him some fun fights. And I'm not saying just complete cans for the next 3 years. I'm just saying,
if you want to see him kickbox, go back to kickboxing.
He doesn't want to kickbox.
You're in MMA now.
He is disillusioned with kickboxing, Adam.
That's
he doesn't
fine.
Want to do it.
And real quick, the last thing was, we're going to talk about Chuck Liddell later. We already mentioned him. Does anybody really need to see Gomi fight again?
No, man.
Like, what is happening?
No. No, that's terrible. And, I mean, you could sit, we can bring up cases of fighters who should retire every time, and it's like, I know I don't like to do it. I don't think you like to do it, just because it's like you can really do it every card, and, you know, the fighters don't appreciate it. It's their call, and I respect that. You know, it's your life. But come on, what are we doing here? Five times in a row finished in the first round, he cannot take a punch. And I was talking about this earlier with someone. It would be slightly different if the UFC was, like, really trying to break into, like, the Japanese market or something. This was the first time they've been to Japan in 2 years.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like you're having him carry the flag out there for you, like, breaking into this new market. There's no point in having him go out there anymore. There's just not.
No. And so, as you said, fifth straight first-round loss for Takanori Gomi. On that card, don't need to see it again. We'll see what the UFC has in mind, what Gomi has in mind going forward. A lot of fight announcements today. We'll get you the latest, who's fighting who, where it's happening, what card it's on. One of those announcements, Cynthia Calvillo, hopefully hear from her on her matchup with Carla Esparza when we continue MMA Insiders on a Wednesday night.
MMA Insider Show.
I'm back here, MMA Insiders. Each and every Wednesday night here on ESPN 1100 in Las Vegas, Adam Hill, Brett Okamoto, letting you know everything going on in the world of MMA. And today was a big day for fight announcements, a whole bunch of them on the docket. We'll try to run them down for you in just a little bit. But one of those fights that was announced, UFC 219 right here in Las Vegas, December 30th. Cynthia Calvillo, Carla Esparza, this is a good one. Looking forward to this fight very much. And Cynthia Calvillo joins us right now on the show. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm pretty excited. I'm stoked that the fight got announced, and having a great day so far.
Good. I saw you doing an Instagram Q&A. How'd that go?
Yeah, it was short that they had asked me to do it. So I was like, nobody was really like had like a bunch of questions. It was just a bunch of weird comments and stuff, but it was fun.
Well, I mean, I guess you mentioned weird comments. Like your popularity is certainly rising, and obviously with three wins this year and heading toward title contention. How has it been kind of dealing with people recognizing you now?
I'm still trying to get used to it. It's really funny and weird that to me when people go to me and they like act all like freaked out, and I'm just like, well, I'm just like normal, you know, like it's weird. Like, but I mean, I'm still trying to get used to it, but for the most part, I just try to enjoy it. I just feel really lucky and blessed to be in this position. So it's pretty cool.
As we mentioned, three wins already this year, looking to close off the year in big fashion here in Las Vegas. How did this matchup kind of come about? How did you first hear about it? What were your thoughts when you heard Carla Esparza as a potential opponent?
Well, usually when I fight, I try to think of, what's next. And so I just beat Joanna Calderwood, which is number eight, and that moved me to number eight. And I'm trying to climb up these ranks. So, of course, who was up, at that time was number seven, Carla Esparza, and Karate Adi, number six. So I mentioned both of their names, and, Carla Esparza took the fight. So it's great. It's awesome. I think it's a great matchup, and I'm really happy about it.
You were fighting, like, every week, it seemed like, for a while earlier this year. So you had not much time off, but a little bit of time off. What did you do with that time? And, it was, July when you fought before. So a little bit of time to kind of sit back and think about how these last couple months have gone for you.
Yeah, no, I really enjoy doing this. I love having a fight, something to, like, work towards. So it's, like, for me, like, right now, it's the camp, the fight camp, the pre-fight camp before the camp starts. So, like, I'm always putting in work. I don't really have to any time off. I did do a little bit of travel after my last fight, which was pretty cool. A bunch of media, went to Anaheim, went to Mexico City. So I'm enjoying the journey and staying busy, but staying focused on my training. And, it's what got me here, and it's my job. My job is to train full-time and be the best athlete I possibly can be.
Cynthia, you already mentioned that fight against Joanne Calderwood, which was a huge win in your career. You've already had several big wins in your very short career. You've literally fought six times within the span of 12 months. Was there ever any part of you that thought, is this a good idea? Do I fly to Scotland? Do I face someone on their home turf? you know, big spot for me. I have momentum going. Is this risk worth the reward? Is it, was that, you know, a conversation that you have with your coaches and your management, or do you just say, yeah, I'm taking that fight. You offer the fight, I'm taking it.
Well, at first, honestly, you know, even before that, on my second fight, when I fought Pearl Gonzalez, another short notice fight, like, every single time we kind of just like, I want to fight. Like, as soon as I fight, I want to fight. But we also try to be really smart about it. I thought I wanted to take a break after the my debut against Amanda Cooper, and then Dana White hit me up, and I'm just like, you know, this is the opportunity. There's never going to be a perfect opportunity. There's never going to be a perfect opportunity. You have to take it. You know what I mean? Like, I know what kind of position it was going to put me into, like, fight in Scotland and fight in enemy territory, you know, who makes this kind of history, not only going back-to-back main card, having, you know, being a professional for less than a year and then taking out number 8 in the world. Like, it's just, it's unheard of. I had to do it. I had to give it a shot, and, you know, it went the right way. You know, I put in the work, so I really feel like this is all deserving.
Now that you've got these wins, you got the 3 wins in the UFC. They were very quick. You've moved up the rankings. Do you now start maybe thinking about being more cautious or more thoughtful about who you fight and where and all those things? Does that change as you move up the ranks?
No, I want to be a world champion. You know, I'm not trying to pick and choose which fights. I'm just trying to, you know, whatever's going to make me move up the ranks. Obviously, I believe 100% I belong at this level. You know, the difference between me and the other girls is just the cage experience. So it's just like fighting there on stage, you know, on the big stage. I've only been doing, you know, fighting for the UFC for 6-7 months. So the more you fight, the more comfortable in there. But I do believe my skill level is up there.
UFC. Strawweight Cynthia Calvillo joining us. Her fight is coming up. UFC 219 just got announced today against Carla Esparza here in Las Vegas, T-Mobile Arena, coming up on December 30th. Everybody in their mind is like, I'm going to sign with the UFC. I'm going to win like 6 straight fights right away. I'm going to be a superstar. But like, in your mind, is this beyond what you actually expected to happen in your first year being in the UFC?
No, I mean, I knew I was going to climb the top. I knew I was going to get to the top, and they were going to notice me one way or another. I didn't know it was going to be this soon. I mean, I always knew that, you know, either you got to be super marketable and you have to be super good at fighting. And for me, I just felt like my hard work was going to, you know, it was just going to pull through. And I had a great performance, and I caught Dana White's eye, and, you know, I just blew up after that. But, you know, I'm excited. You know, I didn't expect that, but I'm excited to just be in this position and just take advantage of it as much as I can.
What's your dog's name?
Sorry, I know he went a little crazy.
No, that's awesome.
His name's also.
So what happened? Either someone came to your door, either another dog in the neighborhood is barking, or a dog came on television. Which one of those three?
my roommate came home. So.
There you go. garage door or something. Excited. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're definitely talking to dog people right now, so we know the experiences for sure.
Oh, that's awesome.
How has life? You know, we talk about your career and everything that's taken off in your career. How has life changed for you these last couple months?
Life's been great. I'm really happy to be here. You know, I fought for a very long time to, you know, make this like in a career, make it like, you know, something somewhat reliable that I can take care of myself. You know, to be able to do this full time is just a dream come true. From having to have to work at the restaurant full time so that I can train and fight, and, you know, just so I can be able to do what I love, and to do it full time is just, it's great. I feel really lucky, and you know, I'm just trying to stay humble and grounded, and you know, stay true to what's got me here. A lot of things have changed on the outside, where, you know, new faces, new people, you know, a lot of new fans and friends, which is all great, but, you know, always remind myself and, you know, and stay true to myself, and that's, you know, working hard and keeping my family, my friends, and my team close to me.
Were you working at, like, a local restaurant, or was it a chain?
I was working at the Cheesecake Factory.
That's what I thought that's what it was. What, I mean, did you used to, like, have conversations with customers, like, yeah, I'm just doing this, I'm going to be a fighter, and I'm going to be a champion one day, I'm just doing this for right now?
No, you know, and I did it because, like, I would also, like, have to be kind of dressed up for work, so they'd always just be like, I'm super, I would look like, you know, super girly and did up for work. And so, like, for me to even have that conversation with anybody, like, it just, it, like, yeah, it would never end, or they'd look at me like I'm just dumb. So I never really talked about it that much with my coworkers. Every once in a while when I got picked up, I was still working on, or no, when I, right before I got picked up, I was fighting for LFA, a different show, and somebody had already recognized me. They were working at the restaurant, so that was pretty cool. But other than that, I kind of kept it separated.
Wasn't that a terrible place to work while you were training?
It was horrible. It was like they give you all the bread that you can eat, like all you can eat, all the drinks, and then like you have a big discount on the food. They have a huge menu, and I would like stand in the front, stare at all the cheesecakes. It was so hard, but like after every fight, I would eat a whole cheesecake.
Oh my God. Which one you go for? What's the best cheesecake on the menu?
Oh my God! So I like the banana cream. The salted caramel, so good. And there's a Hershey's Crunch one that's got like Nutella in it.
Yeah,
it's got the Nutella in it. Yeah, we got that like I think earlier this year, last year. I'm still talking about it. Like if I'm still working there. I'm like, yeah, we got that.
We're sold.
You're doing a great job selling. I've always been a carrot cake man myself. The carrot cake cheesecake. That is the worst on the menu, though. If you ever look at the calories thing, I'm like, the carrot cake one is the worst one. They got like triple fudge, whatever, but the carrot cake is the worst one.
Oh, dude, they're all the bad. All the food there is not. If you're on a diet, do not eat there. I don't. Not even the salad.
Just like, the bread. The bread alone is so delicious. I don't even know what they do to it. It's great.
Dude, they toast it. It's so fresh and delicious. And then it was so hard.
Why didn't you go find a job at like a smoothie place or, you know, some kind of like Whole Foods, Market Fresh kind of deal? Why Cheesecake Factory?
Because the hours worked better for me. I wouldn't want to work at a nightclub, and this place like is open pretty late to like 12:30, and so I was able to just get the hours I needed to for me able to be trained and work. And you know, at a restaurant, when you can get a certain amount of hours, that way you can make more money off tips, and so. It was just something that, you know, tested my discipline for sure, you know, and so made me angry and, like, hangry and, like, you know, really prepared for fights.
Do you ever go back in and, like, kind of, you know, not just kind of humble brag, like, just kind of go hang out there, like, hey, guys, what's up? Remember me?
You know what? Honestly, I haven't gone back there too much at all. I pass by it all the time, but I have not stopped by there too much because of that, because they're like, oh... Here, you know, and I'm like, I don't want to hear it, guys.
that's great. Not to get back into too much hardcore fighting, but how much do you watch the rest of the division? We were just talking about the Gedalia Andrade fight the other night, which was outstanding. How much do you kind of watch now? To you know, those are two girls that are in front of you. Are you watching every fight, saying like, oh yeah, these are the people I have to fight, and kind of scouting as you go along?
I watch all the fights. I've watched all of the. You know, all the females, especially if they're in my division, for sure. You know, being sat out, I sat out for like 2.5 years of during the injury. And so all I could do is just train and keep my eyes on the prize. And I would just see all these girls, like, you know, climb up the ranks and to just be put up here. Because this is, I feel like if I wasn't injured, this is where I would have been, like, at this time. You know, but either way, you know, it all happens for a reason. I got injured and I got blasted to where I feel like I deserve. So. I watch everybody in the division. I want to fight everybody, anybody who's the best or anybody who's possibly becoming a champion. You know, I want to be the best. I want to fight the best. So definitely have my eye on that fight. Jessica Andrade is a beast. So is Claudia Gadella. I thought it was one hell of a fight for sure.
I know you had to deal with, you know, you talked about dealing with injury. You did have to deal with loss as an amateur, but so far as a pro, you're undefeated. Do you even prepare in your mind of like, how would I deal with that kind of adversity? How would I deal with a loss with all this positive energy, positive momentum going forward? Like, a loss would be a big setback, but do you prepare yourself mentally for how to potentially deal with that, or do you just not even think about that?
I've lost and I've dealt with so many obstacles outside of my, you know, outside of fighting, that 6-0 looks perfectly clean, you know, whatever. But it took a lot of losses and a lot of falling down and getting back up to have that. Now, if I were to come back to a loss, I don't want to think about that. I think I'm going to win. I'm going to be a champion. I'm being defeated. I'm going to do everything I possibly can. But if it were ever to happen, like, guess what? I'm going to fall down and get right back up, and I'm going to keep going until I get what I want. So to me, it's a part of life. I'm not like oh, whatever happens, you know, I'm expecting to win every single time. I'm going to train my best. But if it happens, I mean, it's nothing. The show must go on.
We talked about your matchup, Carla Esparza. I guess last thing, kind of break down how that matchup plays out, what kind of a matchup it is for you, and I guess what would it mean for you to beat somebody who has been champion in that division?
I think it's great. I think it's another great test. I mean, she's the former champ. The rankings just got updated, so I'm actually ranked above her, yeah, which is pretty interesting. I think it's great. I love that I'm fighting all these vets and then just seeing where I'm at and, you know, the whole world's fighting out, you know, that I'm fighting some real level competition. And, you know, this is just not just some hype just because Dana White wanted to put it on there, you know. Go ahead, line them up, and I'm going to keep them, you know, knocking them down. So I'm stoked. I really think that this is a great matchup, and I'm really happy just stylistically. I have a little bit of everything, you know. Last fight was a Muay Thai stand-up specialist. Now I'm going to get a wrestler. So it's pretty cool.
December 30th in Las Vegas. That's a Saturday night. Then Sunday is New Year's Eve in Vegas. Have you done that before?
I was there for Cody's fight last year.
Yeah.
So Cody fought, I believe, on a Friday. So that was really cool. I was in fight camp myself, so I didn't really get to enjoy it too much, but I was still super excited. It was super motivational to just be there fight week, watching Cody win that belt. When he beat Dominic Cruz with that crazy, crazy, crazy fight performance, and so it was a silver celebration, but it was a ton of fun, and it got me ready for my fight that I had in January.
Yeah, there you go. So maybe it'll be a New Year's Eve celebration out on the strip, partying after a victory. Here in Las Vegas, look forward. And
tons,
by the way,
Tons of pizza.
Cheesecake Factory is on the strip, too. You can get a reservation now, maybe.
Oh, my God.
Cynthia Calvillo fighting December 30th against Carla Esparza here in Vegas. Thank you so much for the time, Cynthia.
Thank you guys so much. Appreciate it.
Of course. Great. That was fun.
Yeah, there you go. I like talking to people who have waited tables before, because I waited tables, yeah, and I loved it. I loved waiting tables.
Why don't you go back?
I kind of miss it. I do.
Yeah, I'm sure you can get a job.
I dream about it sometimes. Like, yeah, maybe I'll just randomly pick up a couple shifts.
I can see you just being like over the top friendly waiter guy.
Oh yeah, I loved it. I would kneel down.
Wait, what?
I'd kneel down right next to the table, so I'd be like on eye level.
That's weird.
When I was feeling cocky and I hadn't drank the night before because this was all in college,
yeah,
I would do the whole don't write it down, just memorize it.
You know, oh, wow.
Wink at him on the way out.
How often do you mess up the order?
Oh, a couple times. Not very often, though.
But it's so obnoxious. I don't mind it. I don't mind it as much if they write it down and then mess it up. If they're being the cocky, like,
oh, yeah, no,
this,
that's terrible.
And then forget it, I'm like, you jerk.
Yep.
I get so annoyed.
Yeah.
That was you.
Actually, no. I never really did it. And I feel like maybe once, but I talked my way out of it. It's fine. I was a good waiter, dude.
I thought you were like installing heaters or something. Or vacuums.
I also did a carpet cleaning service.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. The waiting tables was far better than cleaning carpets.
Yeah, I can definitely see you enjoying that. I was awful in the food service business. Not waiting, but like, you know, my fast food history.
Oh, so you're a fast food guy?
Oh, yeah.
Were you in the back making the sandwiches or were you
out
front?
I mean, I was a sandwich artist for a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was on the front lines. But that was before they had the option of toast.
Where at?
Subway. Subway.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's actually in your not far. Well, yeah, it was out in Green Valley. It was like Pecos and Wigwam.
Yeah.
That Subway. Oh, yeah, right at the front.
Yeah, that doesn't look too much fun.
That was back in the two for Tuesday. I don't know how many people remember this. Tuesday nights, it was like buy one, get one free.
Oh, so just a madhouse.
Lines were down the street. Like, well, what are you doing? You're saving $5. Relax.
Makes the time go by faster, though,
no,
so it's not bad.
Because people would get... Oh, people are the worst. People are just awful.
I was not a sandwich artist, but I did. I was a sandwich assembler at McDonald's when I was like.
Yeah, I worked there.
When I was like 13, and I would get really bored, and I'd start like. Like putting like 5 hamburger patties in like a cheeseburger.
Of course.
Just seeing if no one ever came back. No one ever came back and complained about it. You throw like chicken and a hamburger on one sandwich.
They would just like, all right, I'll just take it.
They're like, fine. Would you go back? I wouldn't go back.
Of course not. Yeah. I would, as an employee, we did used to like drop a whole bunch of McNuggets in the cooker.
Uh-huh.
Like right before we closed, like, oh, we thought there was gonna be a rush, and then we just have McNuggets to take.
Oh, home. yeah, that's a good move. That is a good move.
Yeah. I think the statute of limitations has run out on the theft theft from your employer. All right, thanks so much to Cynthia Calvillo for joining us, and she will be on that fight card in December. Bunch of other fight announcements today. We'll let you know who's fighting who and when MMA Insiders continues.
MMA Insider Show.
Back here, MMA Insiders, Adam Hill, Brett Okamoto. A lot of fight announcements today. We talked to Cynthia Calvillo. She's fighting UFC 219. A couple other fights on that card as well. That's December 30th at T-Mobile. She's going against Carla Esparza. Dominic Cruz is back.
Love that.
Love it. Yeah, sorry. I must have turned my mic off in between the break.
Dominic Cruz and Jimmy Rivera.
Yep.
Who, I mean, has never lost? I mean, the guy hasn't lost in like 100 years.
20 fight win streak, I believe, correct?
20 straight wins. He was 1-1 early in his career, and then he's reeled off 20 straight, including 5 in the UFC. Big opportunity for him, certainly. And Dominic Cruz will be fighting a year to the day after losing his title to Cody Garbrandt.
Yep.
At the same venue a year ago. I guess this is one of those fights. Dominic Cruz could really... you know, put himself out of the picture a little bit for a while or solidify his role. And Jimmy Rivera, a major opportunity for him.
He's still the guy to beat, Cruz is, against a guy like Rivera. And it's just so good to see this bantamweight division moving again, man. At the end of the year, last year, you had Dillashaw's fight against John Lineker, and then you had Cody's performance. I mean, that's what you have to call it. It was not just a fight. It was a straight-up performance by Cody Garbrandt. And Cruz, you know, even though he lost that fight, I went back and rewatched it. It's not like he looked bad. It's just Cody had an outstanding night. And we haven't seen any of those guys, man. Dillashaw, Garbrandt, Lineker. I mean, really, even some other guys. Dotson hasn't fought. Brian Caraway is a 135er. Haven't seen him for a long time. Sterling was out for a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's get that moving again, man, because I like the bantamweight division.
If Cruz does win, would you put him right back in the title shot?
Yeah.
You mentioned all these other guys that are kind of there. That would be a intriguing fight, especially with, you know, if it's Cody or TJ, really. Either one kind of works out.
Yeah.
So we'll see that fight coming up. As you said, a lot of those guys are getting moving again. And a lot of times when the belt is stagnant, as it has been, then the rest of the division kind of backs up. It's like, well, I don't know if I want to take this fight because then if I win, it doesn't really do much and I have to fight again to really mean anything.
Yep.
So guys kind of get cautious and hesitant. So you're right. It'll get moving again and we'll see how that shakes out. Lewis Smolka is also on the card, which that's a guy who was a huge prospect and then lost 3 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So a big fight for him to kind of regain the momentum that he had before. And then... major heavyweight, I think this was your story, major heavyweight fight coming to Detroit.
Co-main event in Detroit. Francis Ngannou, if you're listening out there, hello, Francis. He's a local now.
Yes.
Against Alistair Overeem, which I really like this fight because, you know, backtracking like, what was it, 6 months or 8 months, whatever it was, 9 months ago when this kind of first started percolating and people were getting interested in Ngannou, Overeem was like, yeah, I'll fight him. You know, and it was like, whoa, Alistair, maybe don't say that. You know, you don't need to fight him.
Yeah.
You know, like a guy in your position, the smart thing is to say, he just needs to work his way up. But Alistair was like welcoming this fight throughout the whole time, which I actually think I love, right?
Yeah.
Because he's just so confident. Like, yeah, I'll get rid of this guy, and then I can get my title shot again.
It's a weird one though. That I mean, yeah, it is. You know, I'm sure from his perspective, hey, it's a guy who's still learning. a guy that I might be able to find some holes in if I watch film on him, and a guy who, if I beat him, I get to kind of seize the momentum that he has.
Yeah.
I mean, so it makes sense from that perspective, but from the other side, you're looking at it like, I don't want to step in there. I don't want to fight that dude.
Yeah.
He's scary.
I mean, the payoff now has gotten a little bit better. Like, I remember him saying that he was willing to fight Ngannou when Ngannou was still a guy that not many people knew.
Right.
Now Ngannou has gotten some hype behind him, so, you know, it's a better opportunity, I guess, for Overeem. But it's always stuck out to me that he's been so open to the fight, even when Ngannou was not a big name. And so that makes me more excited for it because he's coming in very confident, which Overeem kind of always does. You might say overconfident, too confident sometimes. Yeah. But clearly likes this matchup. And so does Ngannou.
Is this just Overeem and his usual overconfidence?
Maybe.
Or does he see something?
I don't know. I think he sees something. Now, whether or not he's right or not right. is a question. But you got to love the confidence. That's what you want.
So that'll be fun in Detroit. Are you looking forward to going to Detroit?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Are you going to show me around?
Sure, yeah.
You and Kevin?
The old stomping camp, yes. The old stomping grounds. We're going to go hang out. Maybe take a trip out to Ann Arbor? Oh, it's a lovely town.
I love it. I'll go early. Yeah.
Sounds good. So, yeah, that's coming up early December. UFC 216, though, here next week, and we'll get you a full preview of that on the show next week. Want to go back, and we didn't get to Bellator because we got off on a couple of tangents, which I actually enjoyed, but I did want to talk about the Bellator card last week because it was intriguing. Certainly one we were looking forward to. I know that a couple of things from the card. First of all, Roy Nelson, Las Vegas, makes his Bellator debut. I thought that he showed signs of, and I know we kind of disagreed about this a little bit, he showed signs of kind of embracing the old Roy Nelson. Like, he went out there to try to win. Now, I know part of it is he was actually able to take somebody down, and he may have tried in his last couple of fights but wasn't able to do so.
Yeah.
But I thought he was he pursued takedowns. He also, you know, worked on his striking. He showed a little bit more defensive, at least desire to have some, you know, to be defensive in the striking. Got the takedowns that he needed and controlled the fight and got a victory, which in the end is what you really are trying to do.
He fits into this division. You know, I mean, this division doesn't even have a champion, and it hasn't had a champion for a while. I mean, there's really no structure or hierarchy to this Bellator division. It's just kind of like, we're going to throw some big guys out there who can do some things well, but who also come up short in other areas, and that's Roy, especially at this point in his career. So he's going to have moments where he blasts people with that right hand, and he's going to have moments where he gets front kicked in the face, which he did on Saturday.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, he fits in perfectly great with what they're trying to do. Now, I think they're eventually going to have a heavyweight champion. It's in their plans to do so. And they've kicked a tournament idea around, and Roy can certainly be a part of that.
Yeah.
But overall, he's a nice fit for them.
Don't have to get too much into, listen, Benson Henderson was in the main event. Benson Henderson had a close fight that went to a split decision. Really probably could have said that before the fight started.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's what he does. Like, every fight is a split decision. He actually was a little bit more aggressive this time, which is a change for him, I thought. But he just wasn't landing. And he was being aggressive and throwing, but nothing really connected.
What I was saying earlier on my podcast was that it's really just gotten to a point where he's ineffective. I mean, we can sit here and try and diagnose what's wrong with him, or, you know, where's his head at, or was he, you know, does he have injuries? The medical suspensions came out and it said that he had an injured rib and he had a hand issue. But at the end of the day, he's just not effective. He went out there and tried to take Patricky Pitbull down and did not really come close to doing so.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really, that you still have some expectations when you see Benson Henderson's name. But yeah, I mean, he's not fighting like the same guy right now.
No, he's not. And Lorenz Larkin and Paul Daly, looking forward to the fight. It turned out to be a pretty good fight.
Yeah.
Good knockout by Daly.
Yep.
Not a whole lot of storylines off of that. Just Daly knocking somebody out. That's what he does.
Can we see Daly versus Michael Page finally? Can we see that?
I would hope so.
We just got to talk about it more.
Just keep mentioning it. We'll do to that what we did with TJ Dillashaw and Demetrius Johnson and just talk about it for hours on end, and then it never happened.
Well, at least we only talked about it like a few times. We were just super intense when we talked about it, and it took over our whole show.
Yeah. It would be like the hour on the show, and then we'd keep talking about it. And
the Daily
like
Page thing,
we'll
talk about it for like 2 minutes, but we'll end up talking about it for like 16 months just because it just never happens. It's supposed to happen, but it doesn't happen.
I thought Aaron Pico, with a good bounce-back performance, was able to kind of just develop on his own now, You know, he had so much hype going into his debut. He goes into the fight, loses, and now he's going to be able to. He's got all the skills in the world, all the talent. I think he's going to be, you know, he's going to be. I want to say a star. He's going to be very successful. I don't know how much of a star. He's just a nice guy. Like, yeah. He's got all the skills. I don't know if he has that star charisma, but he's going to be a really successful fighter. And I think now he can just kind of go to work, get better and better, and not have all the attention on him for a while.
Well, it's just fun to watch him because he's raw. He is as raw as they get, really. But you see, the potential is right there. I mean, no, you don't have to be like a guy who watches MMA every single weekend to then watch Aaron Pico and be like, oh no, there's a little something different about him when he took the guy down and got on his back and was throwing those ground and pound shots. And you and I watched this fight together as well, and you were like, "Whoa, oh my gosh!"
The power that he has
so much potential.
Yeah, there's so much.
If he can harness it all and be fluid and not get hit as much, I mean, everybody sees the potential there. Yeah. It's just will he realize it? We'll see.
For sure. And still 20, it was his 21st birthday that he had that performance on. So certainly a guy to continue to keep an eye on as he develops in his career with all of the. All of the skills that it's going to require to be a successful fighter. We talked about it early in the show. We'll get back to it right now as we close things out here. Chuck Liddell wants. Like, I keep thinking Chuck Liddell is messing around or joking because people around him keep saying he's going to fight. He's hinting at it. Now he's actually calling people out. He wants to fight Chael Sonnen.
Yeah.
Please, please don't fight Chuck Liddell. Please.
You know, I don't think Chael would mind.
No, of course not.
Me saying this. When he was here in town for the Mayweather-McGregor fight, he was pretty open about, like, I think that's going to be my next fight. I mean, he really thinks that that's a viable thing.
I mean,
you know,
at
and
least...
Then it kind of died down, so I don't know if his feelings changed on that. But, you know, I mean, Chuck has had lunches with Scott Coker. We know about those. You know, there's photos of him with his shirt on. He looks in good shape. I guess if he's going to fight anybody, Chael is not the worst guy in the world to fight.
If he's going to fight somebody, that's who I would have him fight, because it's not like Chael's going to go off and, like, knock his head off.
Yeah.
Like, Chael will try to take him down. He probably will take him down and beat him on the ground.
Yeah.
Like, I guess that's fine.
What are the odds on that fight?
Sonnen, 250.
That's probably about right. Maybe a little late, maybe a little less.
A little
210?
Less.
Minus 210.
I don't know. Well, Chuck's going to just try to stop. Chuck's going to stop a takedown at 50 years old, whatever, he's 47.
Yeah, but I mean, Chael didn't easily take Vanderlei down, and he got clipped a couple times in that fight in June.
I guess. Vanderlei's not 50. I don't know, man. I'm sure we'll have plenty of time to dissect whether Chuck Liddell.
Yeah, we'll
fight.
Talk about it in the first quarter of next year when it happens.
Thanks to Cynthia Calvillo at Biokomoto ESPN, at Adam Hill, LVRJ. We will talk to you again next Wednesday.
MMA Insider Show.